ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 As you all know, the Bhagavad Gita has 18 chapters, and the Bhagavad Gita is nothing but an explanation of the Mahavakya, Tattvamasi. Tattvamasi means that, the what, that reality, the what, you are that. This Tattvamasi is the Mahavakya given the Upanishads, and Bhagavad Gita is nothing but the gist of the Upanishads. It was given in a detailed exposition because of Arjuna's questions. The student here is Arjuna, the guru is Lord Krishna, who incidentally were close friends. But due to the turn of events, Arjuna became the disciple and Krishna became the guru on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. It is very significant that the Gita was given on the battlefield. You could think of a few reasons as to why it could have been so. First and foremost, battlefield and Gita, meaning you have to practice Gita in the din and roar of the market field, in the world. Gita is not a post-retirement course. It is something that you learn and live in daily life. So it was chosen to be given on the battlefield, you can say so. And secondly, also the battlefield is the one which is very close to death. The most uncertain result, which could be death. So death confronts you directly when you are on the battlefield. All of us know that one day we will have to die. Right? Yet deep inside, it's not on the on our face at the moment. But the moment you say death, everybody a little bit straightens up. So death is facing on any one of us, the uncertainty of life confronts us on the battlefield. And that is when the question comes to us, what is the use of all this? From morning till night I sweat and toil, earn, save, multiply, all the tamasha that I go through for so many days, suddenly the question comes to us, what is the meaning of all this? Isn't it? When something, God forbid, happens to you and you go to the doctor does series of tests on your body and then he says, it's a very bad news that and I've got so-and-so disease, which is at a later stage, you may not live for long. Suddenly your priority and everything changes. The priorities in life changes. The moment you become conscious of death, you may want to do so many things, but when you are told that you have only very limited time here, then all your priorities change. Isn't it? So similarly, Arjuna was facing with that life and death matter there. So he started thinking about the reality of life. And Arjuna is a thinking type, questioning type. And therefore, he is the one who is asking questions. Even though so many people were there, it was Arjuna who asked questions. In other words, if you are of that type, only then you would be raising these questions. Now, Gita begins with the word dharma, and ends with the word mama. Dharma kshetre kurukshetre samaveta yuvutsavaha mamaka pandavaschaiva kimakurvata sanjaya. And interestingly, the verse is by Dhritarashtra, the blind king. The blind king Dhritarashtra, father of Kauravas, Duryodhana, is asking his charioteer Sanjaya to report to him as to what is happening on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Since he is blind, Sage Vyasa had given the boon of seeing what is happening miles away to his charioteer Sanjaya. Sanjaya is also a very significant name. Sanjaya means one who is well controlled, one who is victorious. So he had the power to see what was happening on the battlefield, which was miles away from where Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya are seated. So Dhritarashtra is curious to know what is happening on the battlefield, and therefore he is asking, Dharma Kshetre Kurukshetre Samaveta Yuyotsavaha Mamaka Pandavaschaiva Kimakurvata Sanjaya. Dharma Kshetra has been turned into a Kurukshetra, or the Kurukshetra, which is a Dharma Kshetra, because the field of action where everybody is fighting, they are doing their duty. And when you do your duty, you are doing your dharma. Therefore, Kurukshetra was called as Dharma Kshetra. So, Dharma Kshetra called Kurukshetra, in that, what did my sons and Pandu's sons do? My sons and Pandu's sons, his own brother's sons. And when his own brother died, they become his sons. He is the guardian of them. He is the guardian of the Pandavas. Yet he had terrible attachment to his own sons, Kauravas. And the whole Mahabharata was caused because of Dhritarashtra's attachment to Duryodhana. That is why he was turning a blind eye to whatever Duryodhana said. He approved of it. He turned his blind eye to the facts and figures. So it starts with the word Dharma, and the last verse of Gita is Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna ha, Yatra Parto Dhanurdharaha Tatra Shirvijayor Bhutihi Dhruvoni Tirma Tirma Ma. Means, where there is Krishna, Yogeshwara Krishna, and Yatra Parto Dhanurdharaha, the great Arjuna, champion of archery, when they both come together, there is victory, there is peace, he says. This is my opinion, mama. So the entire Bhagavad Gita is sandwiched between the two words, dharma and mama. So mama dharma is the actual message of the Gita. What is my nature? How do I get back to my nature? How do I realize my infinite potential? You can realize your infinite potential by following your dharma. If you are a kshatriya, you must follow the dharma of a kshatriya. If you are a vaishya, shudra, brahmana, whatever you are, you should follow the dharma of that particular nature. By following your dharma consciously, you get back to the self, which is your original nature. Dharma means the essential ingredient. The essential ingredient of sugar is sweetness. You take away sweetness, there is no sugar. You take away bitterness, there is no bitter dark. So a thing will not be what it is when you take it away, and that is dharma. A thing will not be what it is when you take away that particular thing from it, then that particular thing would be called as dharma. So the dharma of each one of us, Vedanta says, is Atma, which is infinite. So Bhagavad Gita is called as a philosophy that emphasizes on dharma. You must follow dharma, and dharma is the way. You cannot give up dharma at any time. You cannot afford to compromise on dharma. Anything that helps you to get back to your original nature is your dues. Anything that takes you away from getting back to your original nature is your don'ts. There is only one dues and don'ts. A lot of people think Bhagavad Gita is a summary of dues and don'ts. Bhagavad Gita is not a summary of dues and don'ts. It doesn't preach morality. Bhagavad Gita doesn't tell you what you should do, what you should not do. That you already know. Bhagavad Gita is to instill the awareness in you so that whatever you are supposed to do, you do it consciously. It is to awaken you, it is to make you alert and awakened in this life. It's not going to tell you what you should do, what you should not do. A lot of people think Bhagavad Gita will tell you what are the right things to do. It simply says, you are Atma. And anything that increases the awareness within is good for you. Anything that takes away your awareness is bad for you. From the highest point of view. So all other setup that we have is only to get back to that Atma. So it is very significant that the Gita is started by Dhritarashtra because he is blind. And a blind fellow is curious. And blindness also signifies attachment. Attachment is blind. When they say love is blind, it should be understood correctly. Why do they say love is blind? Does it mean that when you are in love, you lose your intellect? Why do they call love is blind?
Lose your judgment. What is right, what is wrong.
You lose your judgment when you are in love.
You cannot differentiate between right and wrong.
When you are in love.
You don't see beyond that.
When you are attached. Attachment is what is generally understood by many people as love. Attachment is selfish love, perverted love, ulta love. There is me and mine in attachment. Love is universal, not conditional. When there is an object or being that caters to you directly or indirectly, tangibly or intangibly, and you claim to love that object, then it is attachment. Because you are getting something. There is some catering. So there is a condition. As long as that condition lasts, my love also lasts. If the condition withers away, my love turns into hatred. Love cannot be turned into hatred. Only attachment turns into hatred. So when it is conditional, exclusive, it is attachment. When it is unconditional, universal and all-inclusive, it is love. So when they say love is blind, the one main thing that they are trying to tell is, you don't see whether a person is rich or poor, intelligent or unintelligent, and then say I love the person. In spite of whatever his nature may be, tiger being ferocious, you still love it. If you love only somebody who is catering to you, that is attachment. Even if somebody is harmful to you, detrimental to you, you still have love. Then that is, you still have feelings for them. That is the feeling of oneness. So love is nothing but feeling of oneness, which is unconditional. So love is blind in that sense. It doesn't come seeing certain things. When it comes seeing certain things, and that certain things that you are seeing today is bound to change tomorrow. Beauty of a person cannot last long. If you take a look at the picture of Gayatri Devi when she was old compared to when she was young, it's going to be changing, right? The beauty will change, wealth will change, everything will change. So if it is coming out of something like this external, then that is bound to change, and that is not love, that is attachment. Love comes from inside you, not from the outside. You establish a feeling of oneness with the other. a common denominator. So immaterial to what their essential quality is, you still love that person. And that is love. In that sense, love is blind. But here, Dhritarashtra is blind. He is blind to the facts and truths. Because he is attached to his children. There is tremendous me and mine. And since he was also born blind, he is also, in the story of Mahabharata, is a character that is extremely low in self-esteem and high in inferiority complex. So Dhritarashtra was attached to his children, and he is very curious to know what is happening between his sons and Pandu's sons. When he is the king, he should be analyzing as to what is the right thing in the context, not what is favorable to his children. He lost the objectivity. That is the blindness. And king is not supposed to take sides. One of my relatives, who is a doctor, general physician, even when his daughter is not well, he has a clinic downstairs, upstairs they stay. So sometimes when he's gone to the clinic, the daughter comes to check up with him, you know. Then before he writes the prescription, he says, "What's your name?" He says, "Once I'm inside this clinic, I am a doctor and she's my patient. I want to maintain that," you know. So in the sense, objectivity. Once you are a king, thereafter you cannot have a personal relationship. There's a problem that is confronting. You should be able to be in between. But Dhritarashtra was not like that. So Dhritarashtra was nothing but a symbol of blindness. What you see on this board is what I have done as a summary of the entire first chapter. Right? Later on, if you want, I can email this to you. So you need not necessarily copy it. If you want to write down, you can write down. And that sometimes helps you to keep awake, you know. So you can do that if you want to. So Dhritarashtra is nothing but the symbol of attachment, and the blindness is the curiosity in him to know what is happening between his sons and Pandu's sons. And the very first verse is telling us that we have both the evil propensities and high propensities within us, good propensities within us. The challenge is in directing our energy towards the self within. Naturally, the mind tends to go towards the world. You don't need training to be evil, do you? You don't need training to be indulging. You don't need education to destroy yourself or destroy anything, but to create, but to help yourself to get back to the origin, you need to be directed. So the very first verse, when he says dharma, means you must rise. Every experience should help you to rise an inch closer to the self. Nothing is a taboo. It is a taboo if it takes you downward spiral. If it's helping you to take you upward spiral, it's not a taboo. So dharma, follow dharma at any cost. Never give up dharma. If you are following dharma, if you are following your good propensities within, then you will be peaceful. If not, you will be taken down the lane of destruction, agitation. Duryodhana chose the latter. He conveniently followed the evil propensity within him. Nobody is 100% good, 100% bad. Mind means pairs of opposites. Okay. Every one of us has negativities and positivities. when we all come together in the external world, we try to, whether we are really good in that area or not, we try to bring our best performance there. Too much of acting over there. Not much of real personality is there. In fact, persona itself means mask. Over a period of time, because we've been wearing this mask too much, the mask starts becoming our face. This is the problem. So you have to follow the righteousness in any context. What is the right thing in the context? Not what is favorable to you or easy to you. So dharma has to be followed at any cost. If you don't follow dharma, you will lose peace. So if you are already agitated, Vedanta says, it is not because of this person or that person. It is because you have somewhere down the line flouted dharma. So there is no point blaming anybody. Somewhere down the line, you are giving into your likes and dislikes. You are giving into your selfish propensities. If you have been giving into the selfless propensity, the righteous context, then there will not be agitation in you. So Vedanta says, you make yourself or mar yourself. Nobody else is the cause of your happiness or unhappiness. How much ever you may point fingers at others, you cause your destruction, you cause your evolution. So any minute if you are feeling little low, start chanting Dharma Kshetre Kuru Kshetre, which means what? I must have had some selfish intention, egoistic attitude, egocentric desires. Bina egocentric desires, egoistic attitude, no one will be in the state of agitation. Impossible. A lot of people say, see how much I have done for my son and he has left me. So basically what they are doing, they are saying their agitation is due to their son. But their agitation is not due to their son, their agitation is due to their ego, which manifests as expectation. They might have done their duty to their son, that may be factual, but it was not done without the ego. Just like how even if there is a drop of poison in the milk, the whole milk is poisonous. Even if there is a little bit of ego present in you, to that extent there will be agitation. That is a law. So Duryodhana, his eldest son, symbolizes the aggressively bad person. There are four types of human beings. In fact, all of us are made up of a physical body, mind and intellect, as you know. Intellect is the discriminating tool. Body is the vehicle. The real engine that drives the body is the mind. Whether the mind uses the discriminative tool or not brings about these four categories. When your nature itself is good, there are somebody whose nature itself is good. When I say that, 80% good, 20% bad maybe. Somebody's nature itself is bad. Somebody is 80% bad, 20% good. Good and bad means selfish, selfless. Bad is selfish, good is selfless. If somebody is following goodness blindly without using the discrimination, they are called as passively good people. Are you with me? When somebody is not using the discrimination, but they are generally good, they are called as passively good people. somebody is using discrimination and their nature is also goodness, then they are called as aggressively good people. Similarly, when their nature is bad and they are not using discrimination, they are called as passive bad. When their nature is bad and they are using discrimination, they are called as aggressively bad. Duryodhan is somebody whose nature is bad, highly selfish, highly destructive, and he is somebody who uses his discrimination. He is scheming and planning and very cunning. And therefore he was ruling the passively good people, the Pandavas. Remember, one who uses the intellect will be superior to the person who doesn't use the intellect. Intellect is chiefly given to us to sharpen it, strengthen it, and use it in daily life. You save yourself to the extent you use your intellect. Everybody has the intellect, but how many of us uses it? Hardly anybody. So aggressively bad can only be conquered by aggressively good, which is Krishna. So if you read the story of Mahabharata, Pandavas were suffering at the hands of Kauravas because they were not using their intellect. They were not using their intellect. Kauravas were using their intellect. Duryodhan schemed and planned, sent them to the forest for 12 years, and he said, 13th year you all must be in disguise, then come and claim the kingdom. They came back after fulfilling all the things and claimed the kingdom. He said, get lost. They wanted to settle down for 5 villages. He said, I will not give you that also. Not even a square inch of land I will part with. Then there was no other solution but to go for the war. That's how the war became inevitable.
Pandav, so Duryodhana was aggressively bad.
Yes.
And Krishna was aggressively good.
Yes.
And to conquer,
and to understand aggressively good fellow, you need to have little bit of aggressiveness in you. Otherwise you will be blaming Krishna like everybody else is blaming him. They say, I pray to God, Krishna also, but I would want my husband to be like Ram. Not, because you don't understand Krishna. Aggressive, to understand intellect, you need little bit of intellect, no? That's why they say, to understand Milton, you need to be a Milton. Only Milton can understand Milton, they say.
So Yudhishthira would be passively good?
Yes.
All the Pandavas.
Passively good.
Ram
is not passively good.
Yeah.
When you say aggressively good,
when he fought Ravan, he became aggressively good.
No, aggressiveness has got nothing to do with physical, okay?
No, I
don't go about saying I'm being aggressively good and be very aggressive at
once. No,
I don't know what all you understand.
But to fight for the
absolutely.
Yeah. To fight.
See, aggressive goodness is expressed by Ram in many places. When Ram banished Sita, it requires strength because he was functioning there as Raja Ram, not as Sita Ram. I hope you understand what is Raja Ram and Sita Ram. When he was seated on the throne, he was Raja Ram. His wife could be Sita. But as a king, he cannot be partial, even though he knew the truth. See, even today, in the world today, when a minister is accused, and there is general perception, due to certain available material, which points out to the minister that the minister is at fault, whatever reason, he says, okay, I resign, I'm not at fault, I'll prove myself correct in the court. But since there is accusation and there is general perception, I resign, isn't it? So exactly the same way Raja Ram had to banish her and make her prove her innocence herself. So he had to be aggressive there, to be objective. Objectivity is aggressiveness.
How was he objective there? Because somebody lifted a finger against him.
Against her.
But if it was some common person and they had lifted a finger against a common person's wife.
See, what is the general discussion that goes on here? Like even today here in the world, in India, they say, oh, all these ordinary people, when they commit crime, they are being punished. But no minister has ever been convicted till date. No politician has ever been convicted today, till date, they say. Don't they talk about it like that? Huh? So what does it mean? That means when you have power, you get away. So Ram is only trying to prove that point there, that just because you have power, you are not going to get away. But you have to prove yourself pure and get back. And that's what he did. So he was not having any doubts on her. He was not having any aspirations on her. But to the world, as a king, he had to take certain steps. And that's all he took. So what I am trying to say is, this requires strength. It requires objectivity. There are a lot of steps like that he took. He was not at all interested in the kingdom. Right? And then Ravana took away his wife to establish Dharma. He went a long distance. So he was always performing his duty objectively. He never got entangled and got into sorrow or anything. The way Krishna functions and Rama functions are different. Not necessarily that two aggressively good people will have to function the same way. That's all. You understand? Methods are different, but both are aggressively good. Ram is not passively good. See, passive good simply means this. Or passivity simply means good. I mean, means this. Whether it is good or bad. I see my father waking up early in the morning, does his routine, showers and does the prayer and everything. And I've been following the routine also, because I grew up seeing these things at home. First thing in the morning, in South India, they will, you know, sweep the outside of the home and then sprinkle the, cow dung water, and then put that rangoli and switch on the keset, Suprabhatam, which you hear in the Balaji. You understand? Routine goes on. Like that, I don't know what is the routine here. Whatever routine it is. Right? So you grow up looking at that, along with that. And you mechanically follow that. That is being passive. Passively good in this context. Supposing your parents were showing other negative things and you also take that up. Like smoking, drinking, whatever. When you do things unconsciously, mechanically, it is passive. When you do it consciously, it is aggressive. That is to be understood. Right? So, Ram never did anything unconsciously, mechanically. He knew the consequence. He chose to be like this. See, what we need to understand is, if you smoke, there is a consequence. And you can consciously smoke, you can consciously not smoke. Both are aggressive. But if you are smoking because you don't have choice, helplessly the desire is making you smoke, then you are passive. Because there is no intellect there. There is no choice there. There is no chooser there. Is that clear?
No. Why will you choose to smoke then? If you had a choice, you want to give it up. You're smoking because you can't stop smoking.
No.
Capacity to.
Pardon?
You don't have the capacity to stop. That's why you're going on smoking. You know the ill effects.
Not necessarily that everybody who smokes smoke because they don't have a choice. Not necessary that everybody who smokes, smokes because they don't have a choice. 99% of people may smoke because they don't have a choice. Okay. But in a context, he felt like smoking because it was hot or whatever may be the reason. He said, okay, let me have a cigarette. But when he doesn't want to smoke, he doesn't smoke. So he is the one who is on the driver's seat, not the cigarette. So when the cigarette is on the driver's seat, you are passive there. You are not a chooser. Even though you know the consequence. Having known the consequence, you say, I will do it. I'm not talking about justifying your helplessness. As if you have choice.
Say overeating.
What? Yeah.
It's a choice. You know it's going to harm you, but yeah, you're still doing it.
Yeah. You decided.
So you're passive then. You're passive.
If you choose consciously, you're not passive. If the choice, if the intellect is not there, you are passive.
So the food is on the driver's seat.
If it is, then you are not aggressive.
Then
you are passive.
Yeah,
anything. You see, for everything there will be consequence. Right? But I choose in some context. For whatever reason it might be. Right? And I am doing it consciously. When I am doing it consciously, then it is intellect. From a relative point of view, to understand it. So here, Duryodhan is an aggressively bad fellow. He is falsely modest and pretentious. So when Sanjaya speaks to Dhritarashtra, he is reporting what is happening on the battlefield. He says, Duryodhan went up to his guru and he started speaking. There, he is pretending as if he is very humble. He is falsely modest there. And he shows up courageousness. First of all, a person with low self-esteem. Duryodhan is a guy with low self-esteem. Arjun is also a guy with low self-esteem. Krishna is a guy with high self-esteem. And a person is suffering from inferiority complex. Before the other person shouts, you shout to prove that you are superior. And that is the way Duryodhan conducts himself. He says to his guru Drona that our army is having 11 battalions. Pandava army is having only 7 battalions. So we are more in number. But deep inside he knows our army is quantitatively higher, but their army is qualitatively superior. Therefore, the 10th verse of chapter 1, when Duryodhan says, our army protected by Bhishma is quantitatively superior. The word paryaptam and aparyaptam that is used there means limited, unlimited, sufficient, insufficient. Aparyaptam means unlimited yet enough, not enough. Paryaptam means limited yet sufficient. Are you with me? A guy may be well informed in many subjects, have too much information, but very little has he digested. Another guy may be there, he knows only few things, but is digested there. Between the two, who is stronger?
The one who is digested.
One who?
Digested.
It's got nothing to do with how much you know. Don't say one who knows little. One who has digested. It's not how much food you ate that matters, how much you digested that matters. So Duryodhana was basically a destructive person. And when you are destructive, there will be fear, there will be insecurity. That's what the poem Turkey and the Ant is talking about. Turkey, tired of common food, forsook the barn and sought the oat. Behind her ran an infant train, collecting here and there a grain. It wanted variety. Every day, same dal roti, dal roti. Understand? So let's have Thai food today. So like that variety it wanted. Right? And it started going into the woods, the garden, and eating the ants which were moving. Looking at that, the young ones were scared, because young ones had never eaten anything moving so far. So the young one that was going behind the mother bird, they were scared. So the mother bird says, "Fear not, with freedom eat. For ant is a delightful meat. It's very tasty. Indulge." You don't have to pay for it. Indulge. So they were destroying the ants like anything. And as it is destroying, suddenly it says, how blessed our life could be if only we escaped the poulterer's knife. Because it's reminded of Christmas. Every Christmas, turkey is smoked in every house. Right? And it says, man cursed man, he is the one who is very bad, etc., etc. Goes on criticizing. So the poet, finally, when he concludes the poem, he says, "Ere you remark another's sin, bid thine own conscience and look within. Control thy more voracious will, nor for a breakfast nation's kill." You are killing a nation of ants for one breakfast. What about lunch and dinner? Right? So for one breakfast, you are killing nation of ants. Then for what about lunch and dinner? If you put it together, you are destroying the whole lot of ants. And you are blaming a human being for killing one turkey once a year, and that is being shared by 8 or 10 people. So your blemish is very, very big. Human beings' blemish is very, very tiny and small, infinitesimal. Yet you are blowing it. So always, the extroverted mind easily sees a small blemish in others, but fails to recognize a huge blemish within. And the more extroverted and destructive you are, the more insecure you will be. You go closer to the cow, it is very secure. Go closer to the lizard, run away. Little tap here, it'll run away. Why? Because the lizard is constantly destroying. So when a person is generally selfish, scheming, planning, destructive, is highly insecure. In spite of all the investments he's made, in spite of all the relationships around him, in spite of everything, he will be insecure. On the contrary, other person who is selfless, he may have very little, probably no investments whatsoever, but is highly secure. Security has got nothing to do with what you have. It is to do with what you are. But throughout the world, in the hope of security, we collect things. And one of the things we collect in the hope of security is marriage. Afterwards, you become very highly insecure. One of the reasons for marriage is security. In fact, after that, you become very insecure. You understand? The thing is, basically what we need to understand is, there is no security that can come from outside. And any security that comes from outside, see, supposing a person has a very bad body odor and too much of the deodorants and everything the person has put. It has its effect, right, for a while. the person is constantly in tension, then that goes away because they will be exposed. Anything external and it's giving you support will be inside giving you insecurity. Please understand this. Not only scared of losing it, because you are not that. That is one of the reasons why you are stressed when a guest comes and then overstays. Because when the guest is there and the guest has told you, I'm going to stay for a week, that 1 week, best of behavior. All of us are in, right? But we know that essentially we are not that good. All of us know that. No problem. You do this. You do that. You know, overly, you're doing it too much. And the guest says, I'm going to stay for another 10 more days because this job for which I came was not, you know, it's not completed. You have tension because another 10 more days, you have to put on a show. Really? Whenever you are behaving outside your comfort zone, stress comes. When you are what you are, there's no stress. When you behave other than what you are, there is stress in any given situation. So remember this, security can only come from within. So then you may ask, what is all these arrangements, especially marriage or anything? It is for mutually, for both of them to make them go within and draw the security from within. Temporarily, a sapling requires a support. Isn't it? A sapling would require a support. But that support is only till the sapling's root goes deep into the earth and strengthens itself. Many of us used walkers, and those walkers are meant to make you walk independent of the walker. Are you with me? Don't go about telling your spouse, today you are a walker for me. You understand? In the same sense, you are also a walker for her or him. It's a fact. Ideally, what should happen is you use the walker slowly to get rid of the walker. But over a period of time, we become more attached. What is supposed to be a blessing turns into a curse. Isn't it? So Duryodhan was destructive in nature, therefore he was insecure. When Duryodhan and Arjun, both of them went to Krishna, all that Duryodhana wanted was quantity. All that Arjuna wanted was Krishna. Because he relies on his strength as far as that issue is concerned. Arjun knows his conscience is clear, and he relies on his strength. He is not relying on outside forces. Whoever wants to be on the side of Dharma can come, but I will be on the side of Dharma. So therefore, relatively speaking, Pandavas were secure, not insecure, but Duryodhana was highly insecure. And listening to these words of Duryodhana to cheer him up and cheer the entire lot, Bhishma Pitamaha, the great grandfather of Kauravas and Pandavas, who was the commander-in-chief of the Kaurava army, takes up his conch and blows. Says, let us start the war. Right? Let us start the war. War is declared open. We must note here that the war was declared open by the Kauravas, because the first conch blow came from Kaurava side. That is where I quote Shakespeare, who says in his Polonius advice to Hamlet, in that play Hamlet, or Polonius advice to Laertes, Polonius's son. Polonius was the minister of Denmark. Hamlet was the prince. And when Polonius's son goes to France, Laertes goes to France, Polonius gives a piece of advice. It's there in that Select English Poems book. One of the advices says, beware of entrance to a quarrel. Beware of entrance to a quarrel. Being in, beareth that the enemy beware of thee. Beware of entrance to a quarrel. Being in, beareth that the enemy beware of thee. You don't start a war. You don't start an argument. But if you happen to be drawn in, you make sure that the opponent runs away from you. Fight it fully. Fight it totally, consciously. Jesus Christ also says, iniquity there shall be. Woe unto you if you be the cause of it. War and peace is the fact of life. We think there is only war, so much of arguments in our family, as if there is no arguments in the other families. Every family has arguments. It's not known to you, that's about it. World means there will be both pairs of opposites, good and bad, war and peace, joy, sorrow. It's common to all, everyone in this world. You don't be the cause of it. You don't give a cause to it. So when Bhishma blew the conch, from the Pandava side, it is accepted by Krishna. Krishna says, okay, if you are throwing a challenge, we'll accept it. We don't want to go to war. We are neither going to run away from war. Are you with me? Running away means what?
Cowardice.
Accepting
insecurity.
Defeat.
Low
self esteem.
Accepting defeat.
Accepting defeat.
Not standing up.
What?
Not standing up.
Yeah, what is that?
Not accepting the situation which comes up.
When you run away, you are running away.
Running away from your true self. From your duty or what you're meant to do.
You are running away from the truth. You are failing to face the truth. What is confronting you? You are resisting it mentally. And physically you are not fighting it. But on the contrary, like Krishna, he is physically there to fight. Mentally he has no resistance. Agar this is the difficult situation that you want to give me, I'll go through it. So there is no resistance. So there is no building of force in the mind. The challenge doesn't occupy the mind. So a guy who runs away, his mind is full of it. Are you with me? So Krishna doesn't run away. He says, if you are throwing this challenge, fine, we'll face it. And then after Krishna, everybody starts blowing their conscience. So, don't be the cause, accept the challenges that nature presents. Face it. Be there. Use your intellect. See what is the right thing to be done in the context. Be a chooser there. Don't choose before. And after everybody blew their conch, Arjuna expresses his desire to see who all have come to fight. From whichever place he was, he was not able to clearly see who all have come to fight. So he told Krishna, take it and place it. He doesn't say take the chariot and place it. He says take my chariot and place it. Senayor bhayor madhye ratam sthapaya me achyuta. O Achyuta, O Krishna, take my chariot and place it in the right spot where I can see who all have come to fight. Krishna was immediately smiling. He was a charioteer there. So he knew that there is ego in Arjuna. And since there is a tinge of ego, there is a possibility of him becoming emotional, succumbing and leaving. Krishna knew this. What emotions would do when you become emotional? So Krishna wanted to first test and make him strong. Otherwise the war would be lost even before the war started. So Krishna takes the chariot and places right in front of Bhishma and Drona. He takes it in between both the armies. In between both the armies means, the message is, you should not take the side of good, you should not take the side of bad. If you take the side of good, you will increase good vasanas. If you take the side of bad, you will increase bad vasanas. Either way, vasanas will come in between you and the truth. So you must always stand in between and deliver, not take sides. And Krishna takes the chariot and places right in front of Bhishma, which in itself is an education to Arjuna, that you must follow the footsteps of Bhishma. Do your duty. Do your duty. The moment you start anything with ego, please understand, you may succeed but eventually fail. The very first voyage, Titanic ship sunk. And if you watch in the movie carefully, the captain says before the voyage starts, this ship will never sink. You understand? This ship will never sink. And the very first voyage it sank. So your action should be a dedicated action, not egoistic. If it is egoistic, to that extent there will be disturbance, and to that extent you will not be peaceful and successful. Now comes the trouble to Arjuna, which is a blessing for us, so that the Gita is possible. Arjuna, when he looks at Bhishma, Drona, he suddenly becomes emotional. His belief system is churned up. His conditionings come out. He is terribly disturbed. He sees, oh, my great grandfather is here. If I have to win this battle, I'll have to eliminate him. And this very kingdom for which we are fighting, he was the heir apparent. He renounced it many years ago, and today we are fighting for it. And as a person who renounced the throne, we had to kill him. And he starts remembering all his past, how he grew up on Bhishma's lap and all that. Then he looks at Drona. Drona was his own guru. How can I kill my guru? It's ingratitude. Somebody who taught me how to wield the weapons, how can I fight against them? How can I destroy them? How can I kill them? He had a set of belief system. See, the belief system is the problem. Next slide. You read what is there on the slide. It says, we act in accordance with the truth as we perceive and believe it to be. We act in accordance with the truth as we perceive and believe it to be. Not what it is. Our perceptions limits us. There are so many conditionings within us that limits us. If you want to finish off somebody, go on, make him believe that he is weak. Even though he is strong. See, a tiger, cub, that grows up amongst cat will think itself to be a cat. But inside the potential is very high. But outside its behavior and everything will be according to what it perceives itself to be. Not what it is. And when our mind is colored, and a person is suffering from jaundice, everything that he or she will see is yellowish in color. World is a projection of our thoughts. And when you are terribly colored, you can hardly see the truth. Othello was completely colored, isn't it? He was projecting on Desdemona. Nothing was wrong with Desdemona. And everything that he saw, he was interpreting differently. Supposing I instill a thought in you very deeply that this friend of yours is slightly going mad of late. And I keep on talking about it every now and then. That friend of yours is behaving normally only, as he or she will be behaving every day. But now, since you have this coloring, everything that you see, yes, there seems to be something wrong. Yes, she is mad. Believe me, you will come to the conclusion. So you don't perceive the truth. You don't see the truth as it is. You see what you want to see. You don't see what is there, but what you want to see. What your mind wants to see. When you are sitting next to your great grandfather or grandfather and driving, your grandfather is seeing the post or the light post on the road. So he said, be careful, there's a light post there, you are seeing the road. And when a driver is seeing the other cars, he will be turning the steering towards the other car and meets with accident. That is why the insurance companies say nowadays that accidents happen between two accident prone individuals. Two accident prone drivers. Your vehicle moves in the direction in which the mind is going. Are you with me? If your mind is on the road, the vehicle will be on the road. But if your mind has gone to the post, then your car will also go towards the post. So these race car drivers are trained, when the car moves this side towards the wall, when they are turning or something, they are trained to look the other way. When they look the other way, then the steering is turning the other side. But usually what we do is, when the car is going towards the wall, we also shift our gaze towards the wall more and more, and the car will go more towards that. So you need to shift your focus towards the truth, not towards what you perceive there. Right? So Arjuna had certain belief system, and these belief systems corrupt you. Can you go to the next slide? Can you all take 1 minute to read what is there on the board? Read it slowly. No need to rush. Have you all read it?
Yes.
Now, all of you take 1 more minute, look at it carefully, and just tell me how many F's are there in this sentence. The letter F, how many times does it come, appear? Just read it once. Before I ask, don't say. Go through that slowly. Done? How many?
Three.
Six.
Five.
Three. How many said three? Nobody is saying?
Five.
You said three. How many saw six? How many saw anything other than three and six?
Five.
Prerna? How many you
see? Only three.
You are also seeing three. Sangeeta?
Three.
Ami?
Three.
Mumtaji?
Four.
Three. Go to the next slide. How many are there now?
Yes.
How come you saw only three? How come you saw only three? No.
The off means.
Yes. When you say off, see when you read. When you read it as off. So you don't see the F.
Yeah.
So you are only seeing F in finished, F in file, F in scientific. You're not seeing the F in off. Because off, it, in your mind, it goes as O, the sound. You understand?
But this was visual.
Exactly. You act in accordance to the truth as you perceive and believe it to be, not what it is. Here, here. Piche, piche. This one?
Thank you.
Yeah. So in other words, you see... Pardon? What happened? This is a fact. You saw... And everybody saw the same thing. Yet each one saw what they wanted to see. For us, this room is big. But if I let loose an elephant here, this is nothing for an elephant. We don't see truth. Like that, so many beliefs have taken root in us even before we probably started speaking. Throughout the world, you have to be 16 or 18 to get married and to vote, etc. But when you were 3 or 5 itself, you started writing, I'm Hindu, I'm Christian, I'm Muslim, how is it? So in other words, each one of us have got belief system. Arjuna also had his belief system. Certain things as correct, certain things as bad, certain things as terrible, sinful, you know, etc., etc. And he was also looking at himself from the point of view of the body, and he was looking up at everybody from the point of view of the body. He saw Drona as the body, Bhishma as the body. So if I had to kill them, they will not be there. Isn't it? If I had to kill them, they will not be there. Then I will be causing death. That was his belief. His belief is that we are the body having a soul. But the truth is, we are the soul having a body. Today our belief is we are the body having a soul. And the truth is we are the soul having a body. And when Arjuna thought he is limited, he behaved as a limited person. All his beliefs and everything is going around it. See, when you have belief that you are useless, that's what you are told from childhood days. You did something, you didn't do it properly, so they said, what kind of painting is this? Get lost. It's no good. You tried again and again, everybody said the same thing. So over a period of time, you started believing that you cannot paint. You cannot paint, you are useless. later on, even if you happen to paint something good and somebody appreciated it, you will still believe it's just a fluke. I can't paint. You will bring it down to that level. In certain things that you are good, you believe you are good, and somebody puts you down less than what you are capable of, even there you adjust yourself back to the belief. So you always fly only at the level of your belief. That's the point. Are you with me? The level of your belief. So if you limit somebody and make them believe that they are limited, they will function as a limited person. It's a fact.
If you
made to believe that you are limited, you will function as a limited individual. Krishna crossed all beliefs. He will question any belief. Whatever belief it is, he will question it. We have taken all our beliefs without questioning. That is one big problem with gossip session. The main problem, because you are forming beliefs about X, Y, Z, about many things in life. And you are not consciously there taking in the inputs. You have dumped everything into your system. When you have dumped many things in your system, you don't understand how it directly, indirectly affects your life. Once you've eaten, it's gone into your system, then it starts making its presence known. In the right way or the wrong way. Isn't it? So we act in accordance with the truth as we perceive and believe it to be. Not actually the truth. Very rarely a person is objective and sees the truth. This side seems to be a little more, as far as this goes. Right? Yesterday I said 6. It requires objectivity.
I have a very nice example to give. My younger son, he did math. And it was just my husband's way of telling him, but you're... and he would hate it, so he would not study nor do his homework. So it was just over a couple of years telling him that, dude, you're actually good at it. Yes. Look, you're actually good at it. You're enjoying math. You're enjoying math. You're good at it. Today, he's got an option to choose any subject to do a project, and he wants to pick it up in math. So it was just actually I see him, and he's excelling in math, and he's taken high-level math. But for the last years that I'm thinking, just, you know, the example came to my mind was I'm thinking, he's always grown up to hate math. And it's really the belief system that we instill in him.
Yes.
And the same child, because he's a quiet kid, we always tell him, you must speak more, you must speak more, you must speak more. And I feel I want to go back and stop telling him that. Because it's actually a thing we put in his head, and he doesn't talk in the, in, you know, he's not, he doesn't express, he doesn't talk where the family is concerned, where the other children will go, yap, yap, yap. But it's really the belief system that, we, even with our family, with the kids, it works.
Yes. It's what you believe yourself to be.
Yeah.
And the society unconsciously conditions you. Some people consciously condition you.
I think with the children, affirmation also works with
you. Yes, wrong affirmations work, right affirmations work. That's what she's also saying. You know, you should make sure that what is the belief system. That's why even in Gita he says, you are what your Shraddha is. You will only end up achieving what your belief is, not what your wish is. I wish to achieve 100 crores turnover, but I believe only I can achieve 10 crores, so I will only be there. That is why when they say, when you set a goal, they say, no, goal has to be realistic, smart. The R stands for realistic. Realistic means you should be able to believe it. If I can believe, I can do it. If I can't believe, nobody can make me do it. It's a question of instilling the beliefs. And Arjuna's beliefs and conditionings were all wrong. Get back to that first one. So, his belief system conditioning limited him. He had Shatru Bhav in the beginning, right? Oh, this Duryodhana, all these people are bad people. Then he said, they are all my relatives. He converted to that, to Mitru Bhav. I told you, attachment can lead to hatred. Hatred can turn into attachment. The best example for that I can give you is Bollywood movies. The beginning of the movie, the girl hates that boy like anything. She hates him, and finally they both get married and elope also. Hatred has turned into love apparently, and love can turn into hatred. That they don't show. Part 2, after marriage it starts into hatred again. Part 2 nobody sees. Cinderella happily lived ever after. The story ends there, you understand? So it's like that. But when you are attached, the opposite is not far. Please understand, you have to go beyond the opposites. That's love. Love has no opposite. But we are not there. We are in the attachment. So hatred is not far. When you are attached, you are actually attached to yourself. You are actually hating that person. When a situation comes, then the hatred is shown. The only daughter married somebody whom they don't approve. They have not spoken to the daughter. They even don't call her for anything, nothing. People have disconnected themselves. How come? Till one day before, she was their angel. You understand? So you are not loving her, you are only loving yourself. This is attachment. So from Shatru Bhav, he went to Mitru Bhav. But what Vedanta is telling us is, you be Sakshi Bhav. Be a witness to what is happening. Don't take sides. But Arjuna took sides. Therefore he was stressed. His emotions overpowered him. He became emotional. Vedanta says, if you do not have emotions, you are a piece of wood. If you have emotions and you are emotional, then you are an animal. If you have emotions, but they are under your control, then you are a human being. So, a river should have water and banks. If only banks are there, no water, what is the use of calling it as river? But water is there, but no banks, then also what is the use of that river? In fact, it destroys the paddy fields around it. So water should be there, banks should be there. Similarly, emotion should be there, but the control, discriminations also should be there. And when he was stressed, when he turned emotional, he could not think, he could not act. He became incapacitated. And he started justifying his stance. He started getting into superstitions. He says, I see bad omens. I am not interested in the kingdom. Rajasic renunciation. Before somebody asks you, if you yourself say, I am not interested in the money, very clear you are interested in the money. There is something troubling, therefore you say, I am not interested in it. This is what is called as Rajasic renunciation. But when the trouble is lifted off, you would want it back. When someone near and dear has passed away, you say, I am not interested in anything. After some time, you get back. So it's not true renunciation. You've not risen above. You understand? So Arjuna was also like that. In this case, he was justifying his stance. He was not aware that he is disturbed. He was justifying his stance. And he believes that action per se is sinful. Therefore, he said, I will not fight. Confused and confounded, Arjuna resorts to inaction. See, when your mind is disturbed, you cannot think and you cannot act. The more the depression, more inaction you will be, inactive you will be. Isn't it? You will not do anything. So Arjuna's stress overpowered him. He became highly emotional. He could not act physically. He became completely incapacitated. Now here what we need to understand is, Arjuna was extremely intelligent. He was number one in the field of archery. He had lots and lots of experience. He had won many battles. In spite of his experience and intelligence, he still failed. So why did he fail? If he had intelligence and experience. Because he could not control his emotions. Because he gave into his belief system. Because he gave into his conditionings. Therefore he succumbed and he failed. Now we'll see chapter 2. You close this and go to chapter 2. Slideshow. Slideshow. Mail, mail.
Next. Can you open a window?
I just a window. I'm getting a little claustrophobic.
Beginning, from the beginning slide.
Or we can place air conditioning up there.
Whatever you all want.